Morning and welcome to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Now for today's show, here's attorney Ethel Mitchell.
Listening on Radio 1, 1450 AM. Those listening throughout the country and the world on the internet at lawtalkwithethelmitchell.com, WLDCnews.com, and on the app TuneIn. We have an exciting program for you today about sexual assault in the military with military law expert, retired Colonel Howard Cooley. First, I must say to you that this program is brought to you by my office, Wills and Trust LLC, where I do wills, power of attorneys, health care directives, and trust. I prepare them according to your particular wishes. And if you are someone you know needs a will, a trust, power of attorney, or help with estate administration in Washington, D.C., Maryland, or Virginia, call me at 202-772-1988. That's 202-772-1988. Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell is committed to empowering you by bringing you experts and professionals who work with the law every day. The law is powerful. It can help you and it can hurt you. The more you know about it, the more empowered you are. My aim is to empower you. May, the entire month of May, we intend to talk about military law and veterans benefits. Today's topic is sexual assault in the military, and our guest is attorney Howard G. Cooley, partner at the law firm of Jordan, Patrick, and Cooley. We would like you to be part of the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-450-7876. That's 1-800-450-7876, or tweet us at LawTalkEM. My executive producer, Stacy Royster, is waiting to take your call and tweet us. Write us on our Facebook page, also Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell, and sign up for our weekly e-blast about our programs. Now, I must remind you that what you hear on this show is for information purposes only. No attorney-client relationship is established by anything said on this show. Each person's circumstances are different, and you must seek individual counsel for any situation for which you need legal advice. Additionally, we must say that though Attorney Cooley is an expert in the field of military law, he is not speaking as a representative of the military today. So let's get started. Just last month, April marked National Awareness About Sexual Assault Month. Sexual assault and harassment is a pervasive problem in our nation, including in the military. Alarmingly, the latest annual figures compiled by the Pentagon, just released on Thursday, reflect a 50% increase in reports of sexual assault in the U.S. military. That's 5,061 sexual assault reports in the 2013 fiscal year. Congress is investigating. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights issued a report in September 2013 on sexual assault in the military. Our expert, attorney Howard Cooley, is a retired colonel in the U.S. Army. He is a graduate of the University of Virginia Law School and Virginia Union University. He has a Master's of Military Law from the Judge Advocate General School of the U.S. Army. He is a partner in the law firm of Jordan, Patrick, and Cooley. In the military, he served many different positions, including what in civilian life would be called a defense attorney, prosecuting attorney, a chief justice. He is a former associate professor of law and director of constitutional law at the U.S. military at West Point, and the editor of the constitutional law desk book for the cadet. He retired as a colonel in the U.S. Army. He is a member of the Virginia State Bar, the American Bar Association, and the National Bar Association. He is presently an adjunct faculty member of the Anne Arundel Community College, where he authored the Homeland Security Management Program and teaches national security law. I've already asked him to return to do a program for us on national security. Today, however, we are talking about sexual assault in the military. So let's talk to Colonel Cooley. First, Attorney Cooley, what is the law in the military when it comes to sexual harassment and sexual assault?
Good morning to you and to all your listeners. The law is very similar to that in the civilian world. Sexual harassment is prohibited. Assault consummated by a battery, rape, all of aggravated assault, all of the normal rules and regulations that govern a civilian environment essentially apply to the military. The names may be different.
Okay. But now, why is it such a problem in the military? I mean, what we're hearing that it is almost dangerous for young women to go into the military.
The studies indicate nationally women are sexually assaulted at the rate of 1 in 5. The same applies to colleges, and that's the same figure for the military, 1 in 5.
I see.
So we have a predominant, we have a societal problem. Now, the problem is worse, though, in the military because of the following factors. One, these are people who are supposed to defend the country. And the women are assaulted, sexually assaulted and molested while they're trying to do that. That impairs national security. That's why Congress is so involved, and so is the Secretary of Defense and his establishment that he has, that he's leading. We also have other problems, though. The women are on the installation and in an environment that is sexist in nature. Historically, it is. Then they're isolated. Anybody they complain to is really part of the establishment or part of the organization. So it is very, very, and it's a physically dominating type organization. You know, the military is very physical. Mm-hmm. Men use that physicality against women. And so they are really, really trapped.
What is the military trying to do about this, if anything?
Well, The Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program is following the lead of Secretary of Defense Hagel, who in the last year has issued 22 directives to improve the matter. He issued 6 last week, an additional 6 directives governing a wide spectrum of activities, prevention, training, education, sanctions, things of that nature. So he's trying to lead, and he's also articulating the right words in terms of leadership. We have to have a strong climate and that kind of thing. He's like an owner, I guess, who has the right idea, but things are not translating on the football field.
I see. We're talking with Attorney Howard Cooley, expert in military law. Attorney Cooley may be contacted at 703-865-8699 or by his email hcooley@jpcattorneys.com. Now, tell me, what do you think about the various bills that are being proposed in Congress?
Well, the Congress has just decided to do away with a provision that allows commanders to overturn a verdict of guilty in an area dealing with sexual assault. Okay. And that's a reasonable measure, and everyone seemed to be in agreement with that, at least that. What I mean by that is there are others who wanted to do more. For example, Senator Gildebrand had a proposal to, and in her proposal, she wanted to remove the commanders from the process and leave it to prosecutors in terms of dealing with these issues. And Senator Boxer wanted to prevent or exempt a sexual assault victim from having to testify at a preliminary criminal hearing. Those are certainly measures that are understandable, but I think that we could look at a number of other alternatives that would be equally as helpful and yet preserve the rights of the soldiers to confront. For example, rather than eliminate the victim from testifying, give her a lawyer. And they just announced last week there are going to be 185 lawyers in the field to protect these ladies who are being victimized. But the question is not just lawyers, but are the lawyers robust? Do they have capabilities? And what I mean by that, can they argue in front of the preliminary a hearing officer? Can they argue to the commander? Can make an argument on behalf of their client to the commander? Can they file a complaint or a request for relief, emergency relief from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces? A lawyer with robust capability, not just one who's just standing by and looking at the proceedings.
It sounds like you've dealt with these kind of cases before. Is that correct? Would that be a correct statement?
I would say just about everybody who's been involved in criminal cases has had some sexual assault cases or at one time or another. Yes.
Okay. I should tell our listeners that Colonel Cooley is going to be speaking at the annual Legislative Council for the Congressional Black Caucus in September, is that correct?
That's right.
You've been asked to be on the panel of the Veterans Brain Trust.
That is correct.
And what are the Congress members that will be chairing that Brain Trust?
That's Congressman Sanford and Congresswoman Brown.
Okay. So to our listeners who will be coming to the annual legislative conference, that is the Veterans Brain Trust, it's called, I think, is something that you, if you are interested in this issue, you should definitely make it a point to hear Attorney Cooley on this issue and to partake in that Brain Trust.
May I interject something?
Yes, of course.
The real problem, in my judgment, is that the military response and the congressional response is not comprehensive enough. It's not broad enough. It's not big enough. It's not strong enough. It's not robust enough. 48%, this is according to the Veterans Department, of all women who enter the military have been victims of sexual assault at the time they walk in the door of the military. And so they are very vulnerable at that point. And then they're coming into a system where one in five is going to be sexually molested or assaulted. This is an emergency. This is more than just an alarming matter. It's an emergency. And so when I believe, very briefly, these women need to be under the protection of the court system.
The outside of the military court system, you're saying?
That is correct, and that would be the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, which already handles all of the appellate matters for criminal matters, for criminal cases in the military. They can handle also, they're very familiar and experts with regard to military-related matters, and they can handle the administrative matters as it pertains to sexual assault. Women, let's say someone is being locked up in a basement somewhere, and by her command, she can't get, and her command is unresponsive. To whom can she turn? Well, one of the things she should be able to do is pick up a telephone and be able to call the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces and say, I need a writ of mandamus, or she wouldn't say that technically, but I need help, and she can get it. Mm-hmm. These people need to be the same thing that the slaves and African Americans and other minorities have had with regard to robust judicial intervention. This is what they need. Boards for Correction of Military Records are also the highest boards in the system of the military, but they are not responsive. They don't have any kind of expedited system. They don't believe in public policy analysis. They don't believe in public perception tests. They don't believe in the appearance of impropriety tests. They've been roundly criticized for not having any hearings, for not investigating any cases, and that kind of thing. And so they need to be told and directed by either Secretary Hagel or by Congress that they will do certain things, and they will apply expanded analytical and doctrinal tests such as public perception that meet the realities of today's needs, not the realities of yesteryear.
That sounds like wonderful advice that I hope that people outside listening will take to heart. You said something to me while we were preparing that surprised me. I just never been in the military. I didn't realize that military courts are not like regular courts in that they always exist, so you always have an opening to them. Only come into being when there is a case. Is that, am I saying that right?
That is correct. I'm talking about a courts martial.
Yes.
A courts martial is a creature of one case, and then it disappears. It appears for one case, tries the case, and then it disappears. It is not a standing court like you normally would have in any city.
So there's no place where, like in civilian life, at least a person could go to the court or go to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor would go to a court that already exists to bring her case. They would have to convene, I guess, a panel for each individual case. Is that correct?
Yes, but in this instance, although there's a lot of focus on courts martial action, most of the overwhelming majority, 97% of the people in civilian life, are the perpetrators are not convicted.
So we
have a large number of cases, huge number of victims in the military who don't report their cases, and there's no prosecution. Those are the cases, or they may say something, but it may not rise to the level of a prosecution. But these people are still getting laws passed over for promotion. They're getting bad efficiency reports. They're being...
What do you mean, the victims are?
Yes, sometimes the victims are for where you have the chain of command. This is why Senator Gildebrand wanted to remove them from the commanders from authority, because the commanders may be protecting, you know, a first sergeant or some other people and that kind of thing. And so you have this wall, and then they may then sanction the female complainant to get her out of the service and make her go away out of sight, out of mind. Now, these things happen. So they should be able to go to the boards for correction of military records for relief, except for they don't have accelerated relief provisions. And they require a smoking gun type evidence. That is, you got to bring a tape or so, like we had with Sterling. Otherwise, any reasonable implication that would show that, yeah, this is probably a result of a reprisal, they generally are not not responsive to that.
Wow.
So that's why I say the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is an existing court. It functions. They need to be able to go there. If the judiciary could get involved, it could then actively manage this area and help it steer the military and resolve some of these problems. That's what's necessary, and that's a problem.
That's what you feel is by giving the civil judicial. Well, no, you're saying that the court that already handles criminal cases for the military,
which is all civilian.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
All civilian.
Giving them just. Well, isn't sexual assault in the military a criminal?
Yes, but I'm talking about where cases come up. Let's say you didn't get promoted, or you got a bad efficiency report. You made these claims about sexual assault. They said no, and they investigated it. It shows nothing, and then you get drummed out of the service.
I see.
That's not criminal. You now need relief.
Uh-huh.
So you would normally go to the board for correction of military records, but like I say, they need more guidance themselves. Man, so you need, at least even after you go there, you need to be able to appeal these things to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, or some court that actually understands doctrine and equity and law and policy and principle, that can do this thing correctly and give the right balance to these victims.
You also said when we were talking that they have set up a advisory kind of committee that, or something that's going to be giving out different policies and so forth. And you were explaining to me that you thought it needed to be a command.
A couple of things very briefly. Then I was saying that first of all, what we need is military police. We need about 25,000 or 30,000 to be on the beat in the housing areas around the post to protect women from being sexually molested. That's the first thing. If you're really concerned about
them, why do you need
so
many, and why do you say that they need to be on the base?
Well, then, because the perpetrators need to know they're there, to as a deterrence. And women victims, for example, and other victims need to know that they can reach the police. And so, you know, there's a policeman in the housing area as a matter of the routine, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And you can go out and talk to them about the issues that you have and that kind of thing. You need to be able to protect. These people need a super level of protect. One in five? That's 40,000 people on active duty. And if you include the National Guard and the Reserve, that's 80-some thousand people being sexually assaulted. That's outrageous. So in an organization that's, you know, that's supposed to protect the country. So the other area.
Before you go, one of the things, not having ever been in the military, that I did not realize until you brought it, made it real for me, is that military bases are these huge expanses of geographical area where you're really isolated.
Yes.
I never thought about that.
Fort Hood would be, I guess, larger than Washington, D.C.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
It's huge.
And it's totally military.
Yes.
All military.
Yes. It's got, you know, grounds for tanks and things of that nature.
Yeah.
You go out and fire. Yes.
And you were telling me about cases where sometimes the wives of military men have been raped by when they go to the grocery store.
Yes, the case that we discussed, not only was she was a newlywed, and not only was she, and when I say newlywed, I mean like within a month, and not only was she raped, she was murdered.
Wow.
In the woods.
On a base.
Yes, in Germany.
Wow.
That's right. And that's why I say you need people out there patrolling those areas.
That's why
because
you said.
Those areas are danger zones for females.
Okay.
So the other thing is the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office should be turned into the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Command.
What's the difference in terms of military speak?
When it becomes a command, they should be able to command and control their own assets. They then have a stronger place at the leadership table when they're talking and saying, okay, we want my people are all around the world and they're going to do certain things and they can do it isolated from the pressures of the local commander. And then it's also when he's calling these one command to another. One commander to another commander, and so instead of being a two-star, make it a four-star. If we have sexual assault that is this high, the rate is unreasonable, it is a threat to our national security, then put a four-star in charge and mm-hmm. let the four-star handle it and deal with the other commanders and that kind of thing, and I think you'll see more action and more traction.
I see. I like that, because we've got to fix this. We have to fix this.
We do.
Yeah. What do you say to women young girls who are thinking about going into the military? What is your advice? Do you still recommend it? I mean,
number one, consult other women who are in the military and who have been in the military to get a real appropriate perspective. I would say that the military provides wonderful opportunities to serve the country in a way that is so much greater than oneself. It's unbelievable what the military is doing to defend not just the country but the free world. And I think they'll always be able to look back on that experience.
Okay.
But at the same time, they need to have self-defense. Self-defense skills before you join the military. I want my daughter to do that.
So you, what would you say if your daughter? Because I know you have daughters.
Yes.
If your daughter came to you and said, "Daddy, I want to be in the military," what would you say?
I'd discuss it with her, but I would say it's a great thing if you really want to do it. But the one thing that I would insist on is strong martial arts and self-defense skills.
Even before you go into the military.
That's what I want for my daughter.
Okay.
Because in light of one in five sexual assault, in an isolated environment, potentially, you need to be able to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's great. I mean, I think that's a powerful statement. I really do. And I thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes. I think that Attorney Cooley has truly given us a broad and a informed perspective on what is a national problem. It sounds like this is really a national problem right now. Would you say so? I definitely say so.
Absolutely. It's a national security problem, and that's why it's urgent and it needs to be dealt with on a comprehensive basis.
Okay. Well, all of those who are listening, I hope that you will take what he says to heart and that you will call your congresspeople and tell them and let them know that this needs to be dealt with and it needs to be dealt with effectively. I understand there's some hearings that are coming up. There's some offices that some of the members in Congress are doing hearings. Is there some way that people can kind of get behind this and participate or let their wishes be known?
Look up on the internet the advocacy organizations that would be helpful and contact them. As well as your local member of Congress.
Okay.
But there are a lot of Rainin. There are a number of other women's advocacy groups that Protect Our Defenders is another one.
Protect Our Defenders,
right?
Call
them; they will be very helpful in giving information.
If you're interested in this particular area, and I hope that women in civilian life who are also involved in this issue become involved in the military effort as well. It's going to take a critical mass, I think, of men and women who want to protect our women in the military to do this. I don't think that women alone are going to be able to do this. They're going to need the efforts and the support of men like yourselves who find this appalling and repulsive.
Do I have time for a statement?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. The women are like, they are in a category called suspect classification. They need strict scrutiny. They're in the same situation that minorities were in the 1950s, needing a help, not out of weakness, but because the forces surrounding them are so great that are cutting off their ability to just do their work unencumbered without sexual assault. So they need extraordinary assistance, and the Department of Defense is not providing it at this time.
Very good. Very good. Listeners, I hope that you enjoyed the program. This is Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Thank you very much, Attorney Cooley. If you want to contact him again, you may call him at 703-865-8699 or email him at hcooley@jpcattorneys.com. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell, your host. I, again, do wills, trust, and estate planning. If you or anyone you know needs to have a will done, power of attorneys, health care directives, or help with probating a will or administering an estate, please call me at 202-772-1988. I do this work in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And I ask you to listen in for the remainder of the month. Next month, we're going to have Attorney Cheryl Chapman Henderson. She's going to come on to talk with us about veterans' benefits. There are a lot of benefits that people don't know they have. So thank you for listening, and we look forward to talking with you next week. Have a good week. Goodbye.
Listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 11:30 a.m. for another informative broadcast. To reach Attorney Mitchell, you may do so by calling 202-772-1988. That's 202-772-1988. Or log on to her website, www.lawtalkwithethelmitchell.com.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
The Family Crisis Center of Prince George's County invites you to their 7th Annual Charity Motorcycle Ride Against Domestic Violence, June 14th at FedEx Field. This event helps women and children at the Family Crisis Center's Safe Passage Emergency Shelter, as well as supports anger management and abuser intervention programs. Register to join the ride, $25 for bike, or make it a family day. Filled with great food, music, games, and best bike contests. Can't make it to the event? Consider sponsoring a rider for only $25. All donations are tax deductible. Call 301-779-2100 for more information.
1450 WOL, Washington, D.C., and WPRS HD2, Waldorf, Washington, a Radio 1 station and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
I'm Dr. Mary Harris for Journey to Wellness. Around half of the current 90,000 patients on some kind of organ donation waiting list are African Americans, but there is a shortage of black organ donors. Victoria Dent, chairman of the Linkage to Life program, says part of the problem is that potential donors don't tell anyone about their donation decision.
Make sure that you inform your family because they make the final decision for you.
The Links organization has published the Can We Talk Conversation Guide.
We'll give them tips on how to start the conversation and how not to focus on death, but focus on life.
And research shows that the transplant gift is more likely to be successful with a better tissue match that shows up among the same race. If you'd like to be a donor, Dent suggests,
see if their state has a state registry. They can also sign the back of their license or a donor card.
There's more at JourneyToWellness.com. I'm Dr. Mary Harris.
What would you give? What would you give for our babies? What would it take for you to show them how much they're worth? Did you know that thousands of